Green light. Okay. Feel better now, Lauren. Huh? Yeah. It's dark back there. I could tell he was moving, but I couldn't tell exactly what he was doing. But, you know, being a preacher has advantages, or some might consider it disadvantages. I remember as a kid, because I grew up in a preacher's home, and so sometime I would go to school, and I would say to my friends, you know, and we lived in small communities, and I'd say, man, my dad was so ticked at me last night, and my friends would kind of gasp. Pastor Jack was angry, you know, like, preachers don't have that problem, and I assure you we do. And if you don't believe that, you can talk to my wife, and she'll make sure you know that happens. In fact, I remember one time my dad, there's a guy that dad was befriending. He had some really rough edges. He was a bricklayer by trade and had kind of a bad reputation in the area. And so dad just felt that, this is my dad, he felt this heart for him, and so he began to build a friendship with him, and finally this guy came to the point where he actually stepped into a relationship with the Lord. And so dad and him, one day soon after that, they were going to go to lunch together. He called dad and said, hey, let me take you to lunch. And so they're going to go, and they're going to this local cafe, and so he came and picked dad up in his truck, and they drive, and as they're pulling into the parking lot, all of a sudden, this guy jams it in the park and jumps out of the truck and runs inside. And dad's thinking, is he sick? What's going on? And so dad goes in, and he's in there sitting down. And so he goes and sits, and they have lunch. And on the way back afterwards, his friends start chuckling a little bit. And he says, what are you laughing about? He says, I just got to admit, he says, you know, when I ran in there, he says, I ran in and yelled because they're all my friends. And I ran in and said, all right, guys, watch your language. The preacher is with me. So, well, here's the thing. Not only do sometimes people get that impression of preachers. I remember when I first was training for the pastorate, I was going to Bible college. I got to meet my wife's Uncle Emmy. Uncle Emmy was quite a character. He was a traveling salesman his whole life. He was about 5'6" tall, and just about as round as he was tall. Just this jovial guy, just a real kidder. And I remember, first time I ever met Uncle Emmy, you know, he comes over to me and he puts his arm around me kind of like this. And he says, well, Paul, he says, if you're going to preach about sin, you need to hang with me for a little while and find out what it's about. Little did he know, I knew all about what sin was about. But, you know, that's sometimes the impression that people have, or maybe it's even the impression that we give about what being a follower of Christ is. You know, we give that impression that being a follower of Christ means, all right, I need to get my act together. I need to straighten up, you know, or maybe some of us kind of already disqualify ourselves. You know, you don't know my past. I have a story. And so there's just no way. I mean, I'm not even going to attempt that relationship or that following Jesus because I got too much of a history. And sometimes we give that impression, I think, as preachers, as Christians, you know, we kind of give the impression you got to clean it up, and then maybe if you clean it up, maybe God will be interested in you. And so this ought to come as good news, because here's something I want you to know. Being a sinner does not disqualify you from following Jesus. In fact, it is a prerequisite. So all you who are not sinners, this isn't even a message for you because you've already figured it out. But the rest of us, we need to know. It's a prerequisite. It is exactly who all of us are and the situation we're all in. And we need to hear that. In fact, there's actually another part of it. Even being an unbeliever doesn't disqualify you from following Jesus. I got to tell you, those guys and gals who followed Jesus as he began his ministry, and we started talking about that last week, man, they were in flux. You know, one day they believe he'd do something, and they'd say, oh, okay, he's got to be the Messiah. He's got to be God's son. And man, I believe. And the next day, something would happen, and they go, oh, no, I don't know. It must be somebody else. And they went back and forth with this all the time. And to the point where they finally, at the end, they pushed the unfollow button. They finally decided, it was all a pipe dream. We thought he was, but obviously he isn't, because he's dead, and the Messiah can't be dead, you know. And so even being an unbeliever doesn't disqualify you from following Jesus. In fact, I think we're going to discover We all got to start there. And he had all kinds of followers, Jesus did. He had small business owners following him. He had tax collectors, IRS agents. He had patriots. He had men, women, blue collar, white collar, educated. In fact, it's interesting. Some of you were told back maybe when you were in college that, the New Testament could not have been written when we believe it was written. It couldn't have been written by the followers of Jesus because they were all a bunch of uneducated fishermen. Well, that's just not true. So it had been written generations later. But that's not true. All kinds of individuals followed Jesus. In fact, Matthew talked about this one guy, and Matthew himself was educated. Dr. Luke was a physician, as we talked about, and we're going to look more at Dr. Luke in a moment. But Matthew talks about this one guy that comes up to Jesus, and he says to Jesus, I want to follow you. I want to be one of your disciples, that name that is used in Scripture. And then Matthew goes on and tells us that he was a scribe. His job was to write things down. In fact, scribes had to know at least two languages, and usually they knew three or four languages because they were doing that translation a lot. And so all kinds of people followed Jesus, and they went through all kinds of stages in that process. And so it's we need to know these things. And last week we talked about, we kind of walked where the John the Baptist, remember, he was John the Baptist, not because he wasn't John the Methodist or John the Presbyterian, but because he was baptizing these folks. And, you know, we talked about all the complications with that. The Pharisees and the religious leaders were not about that. But John, he has this great crowd, this following of people, and then Jesus shows up on the scene, and John hands them off to Jesus. And remember how he did it. So Jesus comes in through the crowd, and John sees him, and he says to the folks, look. Look. He didn't say, just believe. You gotta have faith. Straighten up your act. Get more religious. He didn't say any of those things. He said, look, investigate. Take the time to check this guy out and see if he isn't the real deal. And so that's the place to start. And so many of us, we've been told something so different. You know, and we've got this perspective as we've been taught about or talked about what God's expectation. It's always sounded like this faith thing, and this faith thing, the way it's described, it's this jump into this dark hole having no idea what's at the bottom, and that is not at all the way it is in the Bible. That's not the way it's laid out. John says, look, just check him out. Just start investigating. See if he isn't who you need to follow. Well, after Jesus, and we looked at him, he went out into the wilderness. Remember, that made no sense. He had thousands of people ready to follow him, and then he goes off by himself. But we walked through what went on in the wilderness, and then he comes back after that experience, and he starts teaching, and people are coming to hear him. A lot of things are said. He teaches different than our religious leaders do. And so he's teaching out in these crowds and synagogues. In fact, eventually he gets so big that mostly has to do it outdoors. But after one of these times where he's teaching in the synagogue, a guy named Simon Peter, who would become a follower later on, he asked Jesus to come home for dinner, you know, and must have been fried chicken because that's what pastors like. So he asked Jesus to come home for dinner, and now, he has an ulterior motive. So on their way home, he says to Jesus, by the way, my mother-in-law's sick. And I was wondering if you might be able to do something about that. And, you know, you heard the saying, if mama's not happy, when mother-in-law's not happy, it's really bad news. And so Peter's got this. So he gets there, and Jesus does. Jesus heals his mother-in-law. And all the folks witness that. In fact, Jesus says to the folks, because it's Sabbath, and according to the powers that be, you're not supposed to do things like that on the Sabbath. So Jesus tells the crowd that's there for that meal, don't tell anybody. Well, you know how that works out, especially in small communities. Pretty soon everybody knows that what has happened. And as a result, even as the day progresses, people start coming to Jesus because they got issues, they got struggles, they're sick. And it says as they come to him, he begins to heal. They bring these various types of sickness, and he starts laying hands on each of them and healing them. And here's what's interesting and why that is significant and important to note. Because in that day, there was a common belief, and it was taught by the religious leaders. And here's the idea. If you're sick, if bad things are happening in your life, it must be because you got sin. And so God's saying, I'll take care of that. You know, you're not doing it right. So here's the penalty. You're going to get sick. And so the perspective was, if you were sick, sin was an issue. Sin was your problem. And that was just the common thinking. In fact, if you want an indication of that, in the first part of the Bible called the Old Testament, there's a story called Job, about a guy named Job. And you'll hear that because God actually makes this proclamation. He says, Job's a righteous man. But he gets sick. Not only that, a bunch of bad stuff happens to him. And so he has these, quote, friends that show up to talk to him. And one of the things they say to him is, Job, you look good to us, but here's the truth. There must be some secret sin or this wouldn't be happening to you, buddy. And so that was the common perception. And so this is really interesting because if Jesus, and here's two things. And the other thing was, you didn't touch someone who was sick. You just didn't. Now, they didn't understand all the germ background of it, and that actually wasn't a real bad idea. They just knew that, you know, it when you come around a sick person and you handle them, and, you know, bad things can happen, and so you just didn't touch sick people, and here Jesus is, because you didn't want to be contaminated by them, their sickness or their sin, and here Jesus is touching them, and he's not getting contaminated. In fact, they're being healed, and so, you know, so what that did was, because they equated sickness with sin, they're thinking, okay, if this guy has the power to actually heal someone from sickness, maybe he has something to say about sin. Because they all lived in this what if. Their religion, their background, the things they had been taught about God from the perspective of their religious leaders is a constant what if. What if I haven't done enough? What if I didn't say that right? What if that lamb wasn't quite blemish free like he's supposed to be? You know, what if I missed something and God still ticked at me because I forgot to? And they were always in this what if posture. And so if this guy here is taking care of healing people, and we equate that with sin, maybe he has something about, he can resolve the what ifs for us. And so they were noticing this. This is pretty significant. A lot bigger than just being healed for them. There was a element of what they knew, thought they knew about God that was in the middle of this. But here's the thing. You know, it's interesting because we're going to look this morning because Jesus goes now and he's gathered a crowd, and now he starts picking some individuals to follow him. And Matthew and Luke both write too. Remember, Matthew and Luke are both individuals who walked and talked with Jesus while he was on this planet. So they witnessed, they saw, heard the things he said, they saw the things he did. And the reality, I want you to know, as well as other individuals, they were kind of in and out in this belief. You know, one day it's like, I think he probably is the one. He's probably Messiah. Then the next day, well, I don't know, maybe. That's not what I thought the Messiah. So they were going in and out of this on a regular basis. But in the end, they became followers. We'll talk about that why in a moment. So they're two eyewitnesses who wrote about what they testified. Mark and John are two others. And so that's what those gospels, good news is really what that word means, are. They're eyewitness testimonies of things Jesus said and did while he was on planet Earth. And so Matthew and Luke both write about when he began to gather his followers. And they both tell the truth, but Luke talks a lot more about it. He fills in a lot of details. And why that is important is because, you know, here's what happens. Here's what Matthew says. So Matthew says, Jesus is walking along the Sea of Galilee. It's also called Lake of Gennesaret because it actually is a lake. So he's walking along and he comes up to these two fishermen and they're out, you know, they're in their boats there. And one's name, it's named Simon and Andrew. And he says to Simon and Andrew, he says, hey guys, follow me. And Matthew writes, and at once they left their nets and followed him. And then he goes a little further down the seashore there, and he walks up to two other guys named James and John. He says to them, hey guys, quit doing that. Come and follow me. And Matthew writes, and immediately they left the boat and their father and followed him. And you who have been brought up in Sunday school and church, you're saying, yeah, because that's what faith is. Drop it all, leave it all behind, and follow him. That's what God wants. That's the kind of faith he's talking about. And you who haven't been brought up in that, and you already have your doubts, you're saying, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yeah, James and John say, hey, Dad, sorry, I know your retirement plan meant that we would have to take over the business, but we've never met this guy before, but he seems to be pretty cool, and so we're going to follow this dude, and you're on your own. Sorry, Dad. You know, we hear that, and I was taught, we probably, if you were brought up in the church, you were taught this, that's biblical faith. Just drop everything, shut your mind down, and follow. Well, there are some things that Matthew left out. Now, there's a reason he did, because Matthew was writing to a Jewish crowd that was very familiar with the backstory of this. And so he didn't take the time to fill in the details. But Dr. Luke was writing to Gentiles. Another way of saying Gentiles is they weren't followers of God. And they didn't know this information. So Luke never made an assumption that they had all the story. And so Luke fills some gaps to suddenly make this faith thing more realistic. Puts it in perspective. Luke says that one day as Jesus was standing by the lake of Gennesaret, or the Sea of Galilee, with people crowding around him and listening to the word of God. So here's Jesus, his crowd is growing. People, in fact, that particular day, he's preaching the word of God. And the first thing it says is they're listening to the word of God. And I want you to know that's where it starts. Becoming a Christ follower begins with information, not faith. It begins with this, okay, I'm willing to at least check this out. I'm not telling you I'm buying any of it. They didn't buy. They were up and down. They weren't sure. But I'll at least check it out. Christian faith begins with information, not shutting your brain off and saying, I just got to believe. It's about information. And that's where it began with them. They listened to what Jesus had to say. Christian faith is an information-based faith. He created us with this brain. He expects us to use it. In fact, I'll go further. If you're not allowed to question, you should probably consider leaving. Whatever environment you're in, if you're not allowed to question, you probably shouldn't be a part of it. Anytime we're expected to shut the mind off and just blindly accept, that's the wrong place to be. That's a dangerous place to be. And it's never what God had in mind for you and I and for individuals who said, hey, maybe I'll check this out. He expected us to check it out. So the crowd's gathering. Jesus is standing there. He's teaching them. And it's getting bigger and bigger. And he's backing up and backing up to the point where all of a sudden, maybe the backs of his heel get wet. And he thinks, okay, we've got to do something here. And so he saw on the water's edge two boats left there by fishermen who were washing their nets. So he sees these two boats. The fishermen are washing their nets, which means they're done fishing. They'd fish at night. We'll talk more about that in a moment. So they're cleaning things up. And Jesus sees these two fishermen. And he got to one of the boats, the one belonging to Simon, also Peter is his name, and asked him to put out a little from the shore. And then he sat down and taught the people from the boat. So he begins to teach. They get out in the water, perfect environment. People can get up to the shore. They can sit there. And Jesus continues to teach them about God's heart for them. And why he is there, why Jesus has been sent to earth. And so he's teaching them, and a little bit he gets done teaching. And when he finished speaking, he said to Simon, put out into the deep water and let down the nets for a catch. Okay, there's some problems here. And Simon right away says, Master, we've worked hard all night and haven't caught anything. There's a number of problems with this whole thing. Now, one, I want you to know we grabbed that master, and don't make that mean more than it does. It was just a term of respect. In fact, when it didn't happen anymore, but I remember when I was a kid, my grandmother, she would send us birthday cards, and it would be Master Paul Kennedy. Any of you remember that? It was one of those, and it's like, first time I saw it, I thought, what does that mean, Master Paul? I kind of looked at my dad like, Master. And he said, "Yeah, don't think it means that, buddy." So it was just a term of respect. He wasn't making any declaration about who he believed Jesus was. He was just showing him respect. He says, "Master, here's a problem. Number one, we've already worked hard all night, and we just have cleaned our nets. The reason we're cleaning our nets is because we're done fishing. And here's the truth: we got skunked last night. We did not catch a thing. When you're supposed to catch fish, we didn't catch fish. And we just cleaned all of our nets. They're ready to go tonight, hoping we do better tonight. And you know, we fish at night because we net fish. And when you net fish, you got to be able to, the fish have to be in shallow water, which in the nighttime, they come up from the cold into the warmer water. And that's why we can catch them. In the daytime, they go down in the deep water, down deep where we don't get them with nets. And so, you know, Jesus, I get it. You're a carpenter. We don't tell you how to make furniture. Don't tell us how to fish because, you know, you just kind of need to leave this to us. There are all kinds of reasons for. In fact, here's another one. I can see Peter thinking, you know, we live in a fishing town here. If word gets out, if these people, in fact, if you'll just send the people away first, maybe, but because if those people start, if they see us push out in the middle of the day to go fishing, we are going to be a laughing stock. In fact, this will be a story they'll tell their kids forever. Remember that time that Peter went out and went fishing in the middle of the day? What was wrong with that guy? He said, so there's all kinds of logical reasons for Peter to not want to do that. A lot of arguments. But you know, here's the truth. Even though there's a lot of logical reasons not to do that and practical reasons as well, it's not like he couldn't do it, right? It's not like it was a big, huge deal. It's not like something that wasn't doable. It's just it didn't make a whole lot of sense. And the truth be known, maybe Simon had this little bit of sense of, you know, I do owe him. He did make things better around my house. My mother-in-law's feeling better, and she is not nearly the nag she was last week, which wasn't, you know. So maybe there was a little bit of that. And so he said, you know, it doesn't make sense. We've already worked hard all night. We are tired. We didn't catch anything. We've got the nets clean. But since you asked, since you say so, okay, we'll let down the nets. That's not a big deal. That's not something that takes tremendous faith. In fact, I don't think Peter had any expectations about what he said. In fact, anything he says, you know, okay, if nothing else, this will be an education for a carpenter who needs to learn a little bit about fishing, you know. You know, there's no big deal with this. It's just a baby step. Just a baby step. But he does. Just nothing else. At least he would makes, you know, Jesus feel better. And he says, okay, you say so. But it's not a drop everything and follow me. It's just a take me fishing. You know, that's really a much better picture of God's expectation of us as we move towards following him. He's not asking for this jump into this dark space with no idea of what. He's saying, now just take some baby steps. Just this one thing right now. Obey me there. Try that. Let's start there. And think about this. Think of what they didn't know. Do you realize, you know, we know all about these guys. Peter, James, John, Andrew. You can go over into Europe. You can go to this place that's built a cathedral for Peter. It's gorgeous. It's beautiful. Never been there, but seen pictures. Love to see it. And it's built the place where they believe that Peter was actually martyred for his faith. But you know, we never would have heard of these guys. That's a moment. If that moment they'd say, you know what, that's so stupid. Sorry, Jesus, you need to find some other fisherman that's dumb enough to do this. You know, what would they have missed out on? What would we not know about them today? This was such a huge thing, although it's such a small step. It was such a huge thing for them and for us. We have no idea what hangs in the balance of that thing that God's asking you and I to do, that next thing. And we probably all have a next thing right now where you're saying, you know, that's what I'm supposed to do, but I don't know. But you have no idea what hangs in the balance of that next thing. When they had done so, they caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break. Now, the truth is, Christianity is information. It starts with listening. It starts with asking questions. It starts with investigating. But God will. There will become a point where you'll have to make a decision. You will. You'll have to decide, okay, do I buy this stuff? I've examined the evidence. Not what everybody else has said. Not what my prophet back in school said when he said it was all a bunch of baloney. I checked it out for myself. I'm not ignorant enough just to believe somebody else. I've checked it out for myself. But there still will come this point where we're going to have to say, and I see it, but I'm still not interested. You know, it's gonna. I kind of like the way it is with now, and I'm not interested. Or yeah, this makes sense. I'm going to continue down this path. We all got to make that different. They had to make a decision, but when they had done so, then things began to happen. They caught such a large number of fish that their nets began to break, and they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. And they came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, and you got to realize, and the guys in the other boats, their guys were named were James and John. So now is the picture starting to get a little different for you? It's not a follow me and who, I don't know who this guy is, but I'm following him. Sorry, Dad, you're on your own. It's not that kind of a story. This is all things that led up to that moment. They'd seen Jesus do things that said, you know, he is worth examining closer. So when this is all done and they saw the boat started sinking from the fish, and Peter saw all this, when Simon Peter saw this, he cried out, "We are rich. We won't have to work for weeks." And immediately Peter offered Jesus a 7-year contract, 30% ownership of the company with a 7-year non-compete upon termination of contract by either party. Peter said, "Oh, wow, this is a good deal. Let's keep going." In fact, the only question Peter had was, "Will this model scale?" Get it? Fish scale? Okay. What would you do if you saw something like that just happen? You know, when everything, all the logic, all the experience you had just went right out the window. And when you, not only did you catch fish, but so much fish, you almost sunk your boat. What would you do? You saw something like that. When you saw someone that just a few moments ago, you thought, hey, he's a cool teacher. And I really do think like the fact that he helped me with my mother-in-law. But now you've seen something that it's notched it up. What would you do? When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees. And he said, "Go away from me, Lord." Not master. "Go away from me, Lord." Suddenly he's saying, this isn't any normal dude here. I am a sinful man. And here's, you know, you're hearing more, you're hearing two things. Number one, he said, this guy is something, this is God. In fact, this is one of those moments where he's the believer. And he's going to falter. We'll talk about it in a moment. But this moment he's saying, "Oh, my Lord." And you hear the whole perspective of God that people had back in those days, because the perspective that they had gotten from their religious leaders and their religious upbringing about God was that God couldn't stand sinners. He hates sinners. He's this holy God, and he wants nothing to do with us because we're sinners. Unless you've jumped through our hoops, unless you've done the good religious things, unless you've straightened your life out and got things in order and sacrificed the right amount of, unless you've done all this, and even then, it's a what if. I don't know if I've done enough. I hope I have, but maybe I haven't. And so you hear that in Peter, because the normal response of a person that day was, you know what? You don't want to be in the presence of God, because that's the end of life. And so you hear him say, "Go away from me, Lord. I'm a sinful man." Everything about everything he had ever been told about God was he was in dangerous position right here. Not only does God invite sinners in, it's a prerequisite. Everything about what Peter and the other followers thought they knew about God is about to change. He and his companions were astonished at the catch of fish. So were James and John. So we find out those were the two partners. And then Jesus said to them something that is remarkable, because everything about them says, I should be very afraid, because what I know about God is he does not. Hang with sinners without someone getting really hurt bad. And Jesus said to him, "Simon Peter, don't be afraid. From now on, you will catch men." Another translation says, you'll be a fisherman. And then they left everything and followed him. That's what preceded all this. It was not this, you know, this shot in the dark, this demand that, you know what, you don't know me, you don't know anything about me, but you got one chance here. You either trust me and throw all your eggs into my basket, or you're done for. That's not what it's about. That's never been what it's about. And even after this moment, Peter will tell you in his own testimony, there were faltering moments. In fact, when it came to the end and they saw Jesus hanging on the cross, they all left and didn't believe. Because our hope, our dreams, this Messiah, man we thought was Messiah, he's dead. We must have had it wrong. But at that moment, Peter was faced with something that he could not get past. But here's our problem, isn't it? Isn't this our honest thing? Don't we say something like this? You know, well, yeah, sure. If you know, if God do something like that for me too, you know, I got a bank account. I'd like to see you. You know, just if you'll, you know, fill it up, God, and then I'm ready. I'm ready to follow you. And so we say that. We say, you know, if God did something like that for me, something like he did for Peter, for me, then I would follow him. And you know what Peter would say to that? Really? What? All he did for me was a fish trick. Don't you realize what he's done for you? In fact, Peter would probably say, hey, I've written you a couple letters. Have you read them? You need to read them. In fact, he might grab one of them and say, let me read you. And here's what Peter wrote in his letter. This is later. This is after he met the resurrected Christ. And up till that moment, he faltered. He went up and down, and sometimes he bought it, sometimes he didn't, and the other disciples were right there with him. And when he hung on that cross and when he died, they all abandoned. They all said, "It's we were wrong. We thought he was, but he couldn't have been. He's dead." And Peter said in his letter, he said, when they hurled insults at him, he did not retaliate. Now, I got to tell you, Peter's saying, do you realize how crazy that is? Have you ever seen a crucifixion? To which we'd say no. Have you ever smelled a crucifixion? To which we'd say no. You know, have you ever seen a man hang on a cross and die slowly of suffocation? And we'd say no. And he'd say, you know, men don't do that without retaliating. Men who hung on the cross, they cursed everyone around them. They were angry. They were bitter. They would look at the crowds and spit at the crowds. And in fact, you see a little bit of that with the two men at each of Jesus' side. He said, and especially if they had the power, which Jesus did. We didn't understand that at the time. But, you know, there's that song that says he could have called 10,000 angels. That's not just a song. That's a reality. And there was always this tension. We talked about this last week where Jesus had the opportunity to do things the way that humanity would say to do them. You got the power, you use it to take care of yourself, to put yourself in a better position. And Jesus had the power. He could have called a stop to it at that very moment. He could have said, enough of this. And taking care of his enemies. Just a word out of his mouth. But he didn't retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. He says, that's not the way it happened. Men would threaten and they would cry as they were dragged to the cross. They'd get on the cross and they'd holler for their mother. But he didn't. He didn't do any of that. And when they hurled the insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He made the decision, again, I'm going to do this the way God the Father says it's to be done. And you recognize, it was a battle. If you remember, if you've read the story, that couple of hours before the trial and the crucifixion, he's in the garden. And remember what he asked God the Father? Father, if there's any other way, everything about his humanity, knowing what was coming, that he was going to be on that cross, says, as if there's any other way. Nevertheless, not my will be done, but yours. He entrusted himself to him who judges justly. And I want to share, you know, that's a whole other sermon there. But, you know, some of you are battling because you got, someone's done you wrong. They've said something wrong. They're, you know, you got this conflict going on. And you feel like somebody needs to pay or at least say they're sorry. Or you can go through all this thing. And, you know, all those same emotions were walking through Jesus. And you know what he did? He said, Father, you take care of that. That's your, you know how to sort this out. I don't. And so he let it go. Peter goes on, he himself bore our sins in his body on that tree so that we might die to sin. He gave us the opportunity to escape the penalty of our sin. We should die for our own sins, and he died in our place. By his wounds you have been healed. You should follow him. And by that, I'm not saying, you know, the demand is at this very moment, everything gets set aside, turned over to God. I'm yours. One. No, just take the baby step. At least begin. Check him out. Quit. You know, I know what you were told. Quit believing what everybody else says and check him out for yourself. Don't shut the brain off. Turn it on. Look him over. See if he's not the real deal. You should follow him. And this is not just for those who are not in that relationship. I'm talking to us as believers too, because you know what's going on in a lot of our lives? There's something that God has impressed on us that we're supposed to be doing and we don't want to. For whatever reason, we're comfortable. You know, we got our comfort zone and we don't want to push out of that. And, you know, it might cost me this and it might hurt that relationship, and he's saying, no, you should follow him. Or maybe it's your stuff. Your stuff's got a hold of you, and you know it shouldn't have that kind of a hold on you, but you know, you've worked hard, you spent a lot of time getting all this stuff, and you know, if I follow him, he might say, let go. In fact, he probably will say, I need you to loosen the grip up a little bit. And Peter would say, yeah, but you should follow him because you don't know what hangs in the balance. And you won't know until you start following. So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you, before we stop our service here, just a few minutes to you and God. You talk quietly to him. And if there's something he's impressed on your heart, he said, okay, here's the first baby step. You talk to him about him. And here's what I'm hoping you're going to say is, okay, Lord, you know, I can't accept the whole ball wax yet, but I'll at least take this step. I'll start checking you out. I'll start reading what they tell me about you and see if it doesn't ring true. And then, Lord, you show me what's next. And for you who have already made that part of the journey, there's probably something going on in your life right now. And you know, it may be a relationship. It may be a conversation you've needed to have. And you know you need to have it. And you know, there's bad blood. And you should have covered this a long time ago. And so it's time to say, okay, Lord, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm going to follow. Because you don't know what hangs in the balance. So take some time. Just you and God. And in a moment, I'll pray and we'll sing one more song. And we'll move on out of this room. But take your time.